It's Ouch, the show that likes to confront the awkwardness around disability. I'm Santa. Ho, ho, ho.
Humbug, I'm Frosty. On this edition, we're getting all Christmassy. Tell them, Kate.
Forget the bumper edition of the Radio Times and the Christmas Day movie. We'll be bringing you the top disability Christmas happenings you need to know about.
Such as, is Scope doing Santa? Is Mind doing a baby in a manger? We have our all-important rundown of Christmas cards from disability charities this year.
But above all else, it's time for our annual festive quiz. So sit back, relax, tell all your pals about the show, and ease yourself gently into the Christmas spirit, Ouch style.
It's the Ouch Christmas Quiz with Rob Crossan and Kate Monaghan.
Christmas time it is indeed, couldn't you tell by the jingly jingles
Listen
on the our jingle? As if we didn't just hear enough jingly bells.
Sleigh bells in the studio. It's like the best thing ever. This is going to annoy you all, show.
Yeah, it's right in my ear, Kate. Just put it down. Put it down for a second. Let me take care of that, just for the time being. Now, Christmas and disability, they're not the most easy bedfellows, are they? I'm not really sure that it's a great time of year to be disabled, is it?
Oh, come on, it's the best time of year. You get more presents because people feel bad for you being disabled.
So pity gifts.
You get loads of pity gifts. It's brilliant.
I don't think I got more gifts because I'm visually impaired. I might have got bigger gifts when I was little, more colourful gifts.
Well, there you go. That's better, isn't it?
Candid attempts at inclusion. Well, I was grateful at the time. But yeah, no, I don't remember really ever thinking that disability and Christmas have anything to do with each other whatsoever.
Well,
we are
going to
try and change
wrong.
This over the course of the next 50 minutes. Now, well, around the table, who have we got?
We've got three guests here to take part in our annual disability quiz. First, he's a comedian. He's the star of a recent afternoon drama written by Jimmy McGovern. But for all parents and children out there, he's the blind market trader Rudy from Me Too on CBeebies. It's Chris McCausland.
Hello, Chris.
Hello.
And Christmas, you're a parent now, aren't you? So I'm presuming that you're about to be doing a lot of dad-type stuff with...
She's 15 months now, so she's. I think this is probably the last Christmas with no real idea of what's happening.
Oh.
And I think next
Which means
year,
you can skimp on the gifts for just one
Do you
one
dress
year.
Her up like a snowman or a reindeer? That's what I'd do if I had a baby on Christmas. It would just, like, every day of December would be a different outfit.
If social services are listening, I can give you Kate's contact details.
I would imagine so. If she goes to a childminder during the day and she came back one day at Halloween dressed as a pumpkin, and my wife was convinced it was the most adorable thing she's ever seen. So I'd imagine there will be lots of big, puffy out foam Christmassy costumes of snowmen and Christmas puddings and things like that.
Perfect.
And,
next on the list, writer, filmmaker, artist and the woman behind the Madvent calendar on Disability Arts Online. Welcome, Dolly Sen. Hello.
Hello there.
Tell us a bit about Madvent.
Well, every year, I mean, I love my chocolate, so any usual Advent calendar only lasts 2 days. So I thought I had to invent one to kind of keep me entertained until Christmas. So that's what inspired it, basically.
And what's behind the doors?
Usually some mad-related humorous take on Christmas. So there's like a gingerbread man who's very overweight because he's on antipsychotic. There's a reindeer that's been sectioned because he's red-nosed. Suggests to the doctor he's got an alcohol problem. So it's...
sounds terribly cheery.
Yeah, it is.
And to our final guest, the last time he came on the show, he described himself as a has-been former TV presenter. It's Mick Scarlett.
Do you do all that? Because some people in wheelchairs do tend to put tinsel around their wheelchairs at Christmas.
I
personally find unbecoming.
No, I despise all that immensely. No, I like my wheelchair to be as plain and boring as possible so that I stand out as I'm the star attraction. I don't want my wheelchair to steal the show.
No, quite right too.
I like my wheelchair being covered in tinsel, just putting that out there.
So let's open up the quiz. Anyway, people, let's open up the quiz. Round one, Kate.
Yes, round one is all about recent disability news. Let's dig in and see what you can remember. So, ahead of the release of a new biopic movie about him, disabled physicist Stephen Hawking has expressed a wish to appear in a well-known movie franchise. Which is it?
Is it Star Wars?
Star Wars? I thought Star Wars. I thought he'd be a good stormtrooper, but apparently not.
Well, it's definitely not AI.
I'd imagine he's going to... Because he's a Bond villain all over, isn't he? So it would have to be a Bond villain, wouldn't it?
You're exactly correct.
You get a ring of the sleigh bells for a correct answer there, Chris.
Every time you ring that, my dog's lying under the table. He thinks he's going to the park. That's the noise his collar makes.
Oh, dear.
That sound of torture for listeners and torture for dogs as well.
It's lovely. Anyway, in an interview for Wired magazine next month, he jokes that his unique appearance, his powered wheelchair and electronic voice, would make him the perfect villain. The film, The Theory of Everything, gets its movie release in the UK on January 1st. Though it's already been out for months in North America. Australia, you have to wait until the end of January. The professor also recently said that if we carry on developing artificial intelligence, it could spell the end of the human race. But that's not as interesting as 007, obviously. Why does he have to be a villain? Why can't he be a Bond hero?
What I don't get as well is it's not really fair, because most of us actors have to learn our lines, but he just can get the script programmed in and then go down a pub. He doesn't even have to be there. And dubbing him will be really easy, because you just get the voice, you know. So, we got that bit wrong, can we do it again? No, I've done my bit. I've sat still in a chair, I'm off out.
Does he look like a Bond villain? I think Mick looks kind of.
He looks more like a Bond
villain. I've always wanted to be a villain in Doctor Who, right? Because I think what you need is kind of imagine Davros's son, right? That looks a bit like a Dalek crossed with Bruce Willis. So he's got big guns, white vest, skinhead, and a Dalek body.
Who
Brilliant.
Who are we talking about there, though?
Me.
Who's going to play that? The big guns.
Big guns. On either hand, be brilliant.
He'd make a pretty rubbish hero, though, wouldn't he? I mean, the idea behind a mastermind, an evil genius, I think it's the disability that's made them evil. I think that's what's gone on there. And I remember, who was the guy in the wheelchair? Was it Ironside?
Yeah.
Now, I remember an episode of that years and years ago. I saw this on the telly, and there was a bomb, and Ironside was racing in his wheelchair to turn this bomb off, and he was going over this kind of bumpy, cobbly kind of road, so he was all over the place as the music was going, and he got to this bomb just in time, and he pressed the off button. That was the bad guys had come to the trouble of including the off switch on the bomb, just because it was difficult enough.
Well, because they wanted to make sure the bomb was accessible to you.
Yeah.
The festive season has seen the rise of two branded days designed to get customers to spend their money, namely Black Friday and Cyber Monday, both of which to me sound like straight to VHS Steven Seagal films from the early 90s. But hot on their heels is the emergence of a more charitable day, the day after Cyber Monday. Can anybody here tell me what that's called?
No.
We've just had it.
Yes, something Tuesday, I imagine.
I mean, you're halfway there.
Shrove Tuesday?
No, I wish it was. Then we'd have two pancake days. That'd be amazing.
Well, you could make pancakes on Giving Tuesday, which is the answer to the question.
That's not the same, is it? You know, Black Friday, Cyber Monday, Giving Tuesday.
Well, this is the thing. Apparently, it's more well known in the US. I'd certainly never heard of it. But do any of you do any, you know, giving, voluntary, good causey stuff in your spare time?
Or, as disabled people, should we be exempt from having to give? Because,
shouldn't we be the recipients?
I mean, yeah, clearly we need it.
I think it's like the charge to get over the bridge into Wales. We're exempt from that. I don't understand that, by the way. I don't want us to start paying to get into Wales, but I don't see why we are exempt from it, because it's not like if you are not disabled, you have the option of swimming or something like that. You still need to go over the bridge.
Dolly, do you think we should be giving money just like anybody else?
No, but I think we should be giving more hugs. I think, you know, I had almost the opportunity to meet Nick Clegg last week. And when I said I was going to give him a hug, they didn't invite me on. But I think, you know, having a day specifically to give random people hugs is a great idea.
And there's
idea.
Few people in the public eye who need a hug more than Nick Clegg right now. So, yeah, no, I think that's entirely apt.
Happy Hug Day.
Thursday before Black Friday was Thanksgiving Thursday, wasn't it?
There's a lot going on right now.
So it's like the Thursday, but without the thanks. So it's just the giving part.
Next question. The Guardian reports this month that a 36-year-old quadriplegic man from West Yorkshire is working on an innovative way for him to see the world from his bedroom. What is he up to?
He's got a really big mirror.
I mean, I don't know how much of the world you'd be able to see with a mirror, but I mean, it's a good idea.
He's got a computer. like the internet. I don't know.
Has he no walls in his house?
I mean, See the World makes it sound like more than what is around his house. So I'm going to go for something related to a drone.
Oh, Chris. Yay. Another jingle bell correct answer for you, my friend. Stuart Turner from Todmorden is developing a drone with an onboard camera so he'll be able to see images from afar. Well, he's doing it with help from a university in Rhode Island. He says, I'm hoping to be able to fly far, faster, further, higher, with a greater degree of control. I also, and this is the main aim, want to experience first-person flight, which will truly liberate me from this wheelchair in a way that isn't really possible at the moment. If you had a drone...
That wouldn't help me get in and out of shops.
Yeah, but you could just have a little look around. I can look around with a drone.
The point about access is not that you can't look around, it's the fact you can't get in. So floating around outside I'm at home with my little remote control going, oh, look, I can see the shop I can't get into. It's no different to sitting outside the shop going, oh, look, a shop I can't get into. So, no, it wouldn't help me.
Our next question. Which disabled superstar has reportedly met her first boyfriend recently at the tender age of 53? Any advances on nothing?
I'll give you a clue. Singing superstar.
Mm.
She's a singer who hasn't been lucky in love so far.
Is it Miss Boyle?
Yes, it is. Get a jingle bell shake.
Susan Boyle. This is from the Associated Press, and they report that she's seeing a doctor from Connecticut who she met at a hotel in the US and who she hopes will come and visit her in Scotland. The random connection to disability here is that, of course, Susan Boyle revealed this time last year that she's been diagnosed as having Asperger's syndrome. Yeah, Susan Boyle. I don't care for her, if I'm perfectly honest with you.
Oh, she's lovely. She's so lovely. Why wouldn't you care for her?
I think it's the connection with Simon Cowell, ultimately. I almost feel that he's...
But that means you'd rule out, like, One Direction as well.
Is that meant to make me change my mind?
I entirely agree.
Oh.
Yes. Next question, Kate.
Operation Disabled Vote launched this month, 6 months ahead of the UK's general election. But what is it?
It's getting disabled people to vote.
Oh, Mick Scarlett, yes.
You finally got one.
Yeah, you did, yeah. This is an initiative that encourages more deaf and disabled people to register to vote and have their say at the 2015 general election due to be held this May. We need politicians to prioritise the issues that are important to deaf and disabled people, says Inclusion London, who are behind the project. That means we need to make our voter power felt. Everyone in this room, are we all going to vote in May 2015?
Too right.
Yeah.
Mm.
Chris.
This is the general election, yeah? It's only right. But, I mean, it's just who for? They're all so unvotable.
Troublingly, the research done as they launched Operation Disabled Vote said that about 40-odd% of disabled people are going to vote for UKIP, so I actually think it's a better idea if they don't vote. If you're going to vote for UKIP, please don't register.
I mean, at the BBC, we have to say all parties are equal.
Yes, all parties are equal balance. I'm not part of the BBC. I can say what I like.
Yeah, just some are more smarmy than others and some are more just unrepresentable than... I mean, you couldn't send Ed Miliband out to sit with Barack Obama and... There's just something... I mean...
I was just thinking, as a mad person, my vote is covered by the Monster Raving Loony Party, so I'm all right, I'm sorted.
Well, on that depressing note for the future of our country...
Yeah, we're all doomed!
As we come to the end of round one, Chris, you are in the lead with Dolly and Mick hot on your heels, just not too far behind. Now, Ouch team member, the lovely Kathleen Hawkins, joins us for a festive interlude. What do you have for us today, Kathleen?
Well, wait for it. I'm here to give you your Christmas card rundown.
Ooh.
The hot topic of the year.
Does that mean you're giving me a Christmas card?
Today.
So
no,
what is this then, if it's not Christmas cards for us?
I have of some Christmas cards that you can purchase this year, all from disability charities.
Right.
And it's always been a good time of year for disability charities to get involved and earn some extra money. So, let's start. Scope this year. They've got a mixture of traditional and modern. One is a reindeer,
and it's in snow. It's a photograph, so it's very realistic.
Well rendered, isn't it?
And then on the back of that is a very traditional Madonna and Child. They've kind of gone for the traditional Christmas, religious and secular.
But shouldn't a disability charity do something that's related to disability
in some way? What do you think about that? Scope haven't covered disability at all in any of their cards. Mm.
Imagine the money they'd get if they got a really cute little disabled kid and put reindeer antlers on and another one dressed as Father Christmas in a wheelchair. See, they missed a trick.
They did. Dolly, what do you think?
Well, I was going to suggest to mind my idea, which was to print out my boob print.
Okay.
But I have not heard back.
Is there any reason why you wanted your boob print on a Christmas card?
Because I couldn't use a sheet to print a card because the card isn't big enough.
Makes sense.
I mean, it doesn't really
make
sense.
That's all my
me,
questions are answered.
Okay, cool. Chris, what do you think about the Scope cards?
No, I think it's Christmas, isn't it? That's what they've done. The aim of them is to raise money, isn't it? It's not to promote disability, it's to raise money for what they do.
Yeah, can't you do both?
There's a lot of charities out there this year doing both. So MenCap, they run a Christmas card competition, and a lot of disability charities do that. So this year, they are featuring this design by Stephen Evans. Now, he's 14.
And this is what I want to see.
And it's two robins, a large one and a smaller one. On the back, that one... Can you guess what charity that is, interestingly?
Oh. So this has got a reindeer with lots of snow around it and then a Christmas tree that's upside down.
Upside down, yes.
Yeah. The person who drew this one is Patrick Craig.
I love this.
He's eight.
I love this.
See, I think that's pretty good.
Aww. This is the kind of card I want to get at Christmas.
Yeah. So he drew that for the National Autistic Society.
Oh, it's great.
I like that. That's my favourite so far.
Aren't they?
Yeah.
That's your favourite so far. So
I just love the way the Christmas tree is upside down. I mean, why should our Christmas trees be the right way up? Who says that? Like,
what's this one?
What do you think? What charity do you think this one is? This is two dogs driving a car, and one of them's wearing a Santa hat. Now, what disability charity?
Guide Dogs for the Blind.
Oh, it has to
be. It's Guide Dogs, yes, well done. They've really capitalised on the dog Christmas cards this year. All over the website, there are various dog cards.
I like that.
Yeah,
it's also got a kind of extra kind of coolness because it's like, hey, our dogs are so good at guiding people, they can drive you.
So thank you very much, Kathleen, for showing us this collection of Christmas cards. Festive salutations to you all. Coming up... That's People Pleaser by disabled artist Tony Hickman. We'll be playing that in full at the end of the show. You're listening to Ouch, the disability talk show from the BBC. And we're in the middle of our annual quiz. With us is Chris McCausland, Dolly Sen and Mick Scarlett. Now, round two, around all about stories from the year we've just lived through. In August, Nick Clegg, the UK's Deputy Prime Minister, caused headlines when he said that the mental health sector needed a breakthrough comparable to what? Any takers on this? Dolly, any guesses?
I try to avoid what Nick Clegg says, so I don't know.
Needed a breakthrough comparable to...
Some big medical breakthrough that happened a while ago by accident, I think it happened.
Penicillin.
Yes, Chris and Mick at the same time there.
Steaming ahead, both of you. So, yeah, it was at a speech where Clegg pledged that the Liberal Democrat manifesto would boost mental health research by 50 million a year by 2020. This is also according to an analysis published in the British Medical Journal, where apparently mental health accounts for 23% of the UK's, and I'm quoting now, disease burden. The burden on society of all diseases and health conditions, but receives only 6% of all medical research funding. Are you still with me? Good. Okay, so next question.
In July, Britain got another new disability minister. What is his or her name? Ooh. I mean, we've had so many. I mean, I reckon you can get a point if you can name any of them in this coalition
Esther.
Government.
Good old Esther.
Mick gets a point and a jingle.
This one's called Mike, isn't it? Is it Mike, or was that one before?
No, we've had Mike before.
Oh, Mike, Esther, and then Mystery Man.
Chris, any ideas?
I haven't got the foggiest.
No? Can you name any of the others that we've had?
No.
Dolly, no. Anything?
No.
Oh,
this is a damning indictment, isn't it? Because I didn't know either. Did you know?
I did know. Of course I know.
Kate knew. Okay, that's one out of five.
I think I could have named all four we've had in this government.
All right, show off.
I know, but it's because I take an interest, Rob. I take an interest in the world.
You spend all day watching BBC Parliament in your knickers.
In my onesie, thanks. There's a chill blowing through the studio because it got a bit serious. I think the snow's arriving.
Is that a festive noise? Because that just reminds
snow.
Me of hypothermia.
It's just the chilled heart of Christmas.
Anyway, so
we've got Mark Harper, the MP for the Forest of Dean. And before that, we had Mike Penning, Esther McVeigh. And of course, how can you forget Maria Miller? Yeah. The Minister of State for Disabled People has been replaced every single year in the coalition government. Mick, I think you interviewed quite a high profile person who was Minister for Disabled People once.
Good old Willie.
That's
Willie Hague.
Correct.
Yes, I did. Many years ago, I was invited in the 90s. This is invited to interview him, and of course, I had all spiky hair. I still have spiky hair.
We forget that he was a disability.
Yes, he was. He
then went on to lead the Tory Party, and
yes, and
he was
and
quite
I
a
was
big deal.
Ordered by the BBC that I needed to, when I met him, I had to flatten my hair down. So he arrived early, and I was ladling gel onto my hair to flatten it down, and I had to shake his hand covered in hair gel.
Nice.
And we had a long conversation about hair, which was quite funny because he made it quite plain that he obviously doesn't know much about hair gel.
Well, he doesn't have any hair.
Exactly.
But was he a good disability minister? Was he one of the...
He was a very nice bloke, which is very annoying for me with my politics. he was a very nice person. I think back then the politics of disability was very different. There was still this kind of, oh, you poor little thing kind of approach, which is not good, but it's still better than you horrible, scrounging, useless thing.
Is that how Mr. Hague treated you, though, as a...
No, he treated me as a complete equal. So very charming and nice. Like I said, it was horrible. I left feeling almost dirty because I'd met a Tory that I actually liked.
Interesting.
He has a very condescending voice at the best of times, though, doesn't he? So it doesn't really matter how he's talking to you. Yeah. It still sounds like he's... There's nothing you can do about his voice and the insincerity.
Now, in August, actor Robin Williams was sadly found dead at his home in California. It was confirmed that he took his own life. And tributes did pour in. He was said to have had bipolar disorder. Later it emerged he'd been given a diagnosis of Parkinson's. So we'll talk about that a little more in a moment. But first of all, can you name, between you all, three films in which Williams starred?
Mrs. Doubtfire.
One.
A classic.
Good Will Hunting.
Two.
Very good.
The Poets Society.
We've got three. Okay.
Can you not name any, Mick?
I've lost interest after Morecambe and Mindy.
Just in the film industry in general, or...?
Just, no, he's not really... Oh, he did that thing about being a robot, didn't he? I can't even remember what that was called.
What film was that? The World According AI?
No, he started off being a robot. AI. He started off being a robot, and then he gradually got himself turned into a human.
It's not enough. He looked like Metal Mickey in it, didn't he?
Yes, that's right. Yes. It was all gold and weird, and then he eventually got turned into a human.
It wasn't Bicentennial Man.
It was Bicentennial Man, bravo. Give that man
good.
A shaky thing. Yay!
Shaky thing. Points to Dolly there, who got two out of three. Now, Dolly, you wrote about Robin Williams passing on your blog.
Yes.
How did you feel it was handled by the media?
I think it was handled very badly. It was either the two kind of viewpoints that came up was either one of pity or one of judgment, and neither are really helpful to his family, to people who are struggling with, you know, the... with kind of thoughts of suicide. The good thing it did was it did bring it up for discussion. So, you know, people can say, oh, he was selfish for doing that, but then this, it also gave opportunity for other people to say, actually, it's not selfish. When you're in that state of being, you can't think logically, you can't see the world from the outside. It is very, you know, it is a bit like being in quicksand and you expecting people telling you to kind of snap out of it. It's a very difficult thing to do. So the fact that people are talking about it is a good thing, but nobody wants to talk about why more people are committing suicide. And
so there's too much emphasis on the grisly detail and not enough on the causes and as to why.
And do you think that it being revealed that he was diagnosed with Parkinson's, do you think everybody suddenly went, oh, well, that's why he
I
did it?
I thought that was tragic. I thought that it started off with, oh, how could he? What a selfish thing to do. The horror of leaving his family. And then, oh, well, that makes sense then. course, well, you know, sensible. You know, who wanted to get Parkinson's? Oh, yeah. You know, that's what we'd do. And I think that's the real way that media portrays it. It's like, oh, well, when he had a mental health issue, he was just being selfish. Oh, but then he had something that might eventually lead him to be, you know, needing assistance to live. Oh, well, in that case, it was obvious, just a sensible way of preventing lack of dignity. And I thought it was tragic, you know, such a sad thing, such a talent to go, and no one sort of said, oh, how could we have helped him? How can we support him? Whether it was a mental health issue or Parkinson's, no one said, we need to build a society where people don't think that that's a rational way out. It was, oh, well, that just makes sense. So we feel a bit bad now that we were a bit horrible to him when we just thought he just had mental health issues.
You've got to remember as well, though, that this... the portrayal was purely the media. It wasn't the public. The general public's, I think, across the board, was one of sadness, you know? Mm. And I know that other people go through these things and other people take their own lives and or in situations where they feel that they might, and it happened. But Robin Williams is different because everybody feels a connection to him because you've grown up with him. So there is a difference there. You do feel this connection to someone that you don't know.
Was he a hero of yours, Chris?
He was... I wouldn't say a hero, but he was. I mean, when I was blown away by the, like, in a shocked way. It was one of them things I never really, when I saw the news in the morning, it affected me, you know, because you've got such a connection to the films and the comedy from when you were a kid, really.
And as a fellow comedian, I guess.
Yeah, and you know he was revolutionary. He was, you know, and he was still gigging. He loved stand up. His heart was still in it very much so. You know, he cared a lot about it. But I from people I spoke to in comedy and out of comedy, people were sad that this had happened, that he felt that he had to do it. Whereas the media portrayal was, there's no story in sadness a lot of the time. The story in details. And you know, making things out to be, did he have drugs in his system? Was he, you know what I mean? And it's all about making the story from the media point of view, but that's not representative of the general public's, you know, feelings about things like that.
Hmm. Indeed. So our next question features a guest of the show, doesn't it? Kate, do you want to ask this one?
In May, Scope launched a campaign that addressed people's worst fears about contact with disabled people. It featured Last Leg presenter Alex Brooker. But what was the campaign called? Weren't you in it, Mick?
Probably.
Were you in it as well, Chris?
I don't think so.
Did you do something with Scope?
No, I did something about something, but I can't remember what.
Think you were in it.
Probably.
I did something with them as well, so...
Yeah. Shows that... do you know what? I don't think they ever actually sent me a link to the thing that they released, so I don't even know what I look like.
You look very good. Very good indeed.
It's that filter. They've got that special Photoshop filter that
exactly.
They can put on now.
So what was this thing called that almost all of us were involved in?
It was something about embarrassment or something.
Close.
Oh.
And the...
Awkward.
Yes, well done, Mick Scott.
It was not really. You
get half
it.
A jingle for that. Half a jingle. It was called End the Awkward, and as a part of their campaign on their website, Scope published a list of 12 words or terms that we should all avoid. Now, I'll give you a point for each one you can guess. What are these 12 terms we should all avoid? Now, remember, let's keep this nice, guys.
Is this just mental health?
No, all disability.
Well, spastic, you're not allowed to say that.
Cripple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep.
Retard.
Yeah, that's in there.
Yeah.
Ooh, actually, I can see him. I can read.
Dolly?
Special?
Ooh, that's not on the list.
It should be.
Definitely should be.
Mental health related one, Dolly, you can think of?
Psycho?
Yeah.
Mad?
Mad's not on there.
Right, okay.
Crazy.
No.
Also not on there.
So what we've got is crippled, victim, sufferer, spastic, slow, simple, handicap, midget, retard, mental patient, psycho, schizo, wheelchair bound, confined to a wheelchair, the disabled, the blind, and the deaf.
Okay.
How many of them do I use?
Well, I'm pretty sure you've used all of them today.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. Yeah, just in the last hour. Anyway, that's the end of round two. I'm fairly sure that Chris is in the lead still.
Oh, absolutely.
Yes, and before we launch into our final round, Ouch's own Emma Tracy is here.
Emma, hello.
Hello.
What have you got for us?
Well, under the Christmas tree for you guys
today... Have you got mince pies?
Oh, there are mince pies, yes. Yay. They're here on the table. Welcome to...
Can I open them and hand them round now, please, Emma?
I'm not the boss. I guess that might be allowed.
Well, I'm going to do it anyway.
That's all right.
Mince pies, well, Ollie?
As we're all getting into the festive spirit, I've got a trio of Christmassy things under my tree for you guys today. The first one is the inclusive advent calendar to complement Dolly's Madvent calendar. This is also online.
So an inclusive advent calendar, is this one that talks to you if you're blind, or what does it do?
No, it's a website called inclusiveadvent.co.uk, and it's just a teeny weeny little project that a couple set up in their Church of England Diocese of Durham, and they're part of this inclusive church movement, which is kind of trying to get more diversity into the Church of England and to be very accepting of all types of different people.
Well, that's delightful.
Yeah, well, they're called the Ambrose Thurmans, and Mr. Ambrose Thurman likes building websites, so they just thought they'd set up a calendar, and they said, oh, we'll pop it on Facebook, and it got 4,000 shares by the 3rd of December, so it's still going up, so it's over 4,000 shares on Facebook. And I've seen it a lot in my Facebook feed from disabled and non-disabled people, and they've said that they're really quite pleased with how many non-Christians are sharing it just because of its inclusivity.
As an Irish Catholic, are you enjoying the Bible and the references to blindness? Because I've got something here that says, biblical references to blindness are almost always negative, and for many visually impaired people, such negative connotations are distressing, even enough to turn some away from the church entirely. It's important to look beyond this outmoded understanding of blindness and realise that nowadays visually impaired people lead lives of worth to themselves and others. Isn't this a bit patronising to disabled people?
To be fair, on each Advent calendar window there's an image, a Bible verse, a prayer and a reflection by someone who's kind of in the situation or who has experience of the situation. So the person who actually wrote that piece is blind and has been from the age of 3 and also is very, very involved in the Church of England. So, yeah, some people could see it as patronising, but I guess that's her view, and it has a little biog of her at the bottom, so I guess you know where it's coming from. So they've had homelessness, they've had children, single people and blindness so far. Coming up in the calendar, they've got mental health problems, they've got chronic health, unseen disabilities, and they've got wheelchair users as well. And they want all the reflection bits of each window to be done by somebody in the area of that, someone who has the disability or someone who works in the area of that disability. So it's just a nice little thing, and it's inclusiveadvent.co.uk.
But there's no chocolates.
No
chocolates, not even virtual ones.
But if it's you get good to the end and say all the prayers, then you're cured.
So would you like to hear what else is under the tree?
What else is under the tree?
A charity called Action for Kids, who work with disabled teenagers between 14 and 19 years old who have special educational needs. They do lots of different work with them to help them get the best out of school and to give them a voice, and they've got a mobility equipment set up as well. But they asked a group of their young people that work with them what they want for Christmas, and then they put the answers on BuzzFeed.
These are photographs of people with various disabilities, and they're holding up bits of paper where printed in large black font are their Christmas wishes, and it's surprising because for me I would have assumed it would be, you know, I want another iPad, but they're actually quite thoughtful. I want to live on my own, says one. I want to work with children, says another. I want to get married and have kids. There's one woman holding a sign which says, I want to get a paid job, travel the world. Oh, and there's one guy who has just put, own a BMW. He probably looks a bit stupid. He probably feels a bit stupid. He looks how worthy all the other ones were. Everyone else wants world peace. He wants a BMW.
Well, exactly. One wants to move to Canada. Totally reasonable.
Yeah, I like that. Get out of here.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, the third thing under the tree for you is a bit more serious. Last year, Charlotte Walker, a blogger with bipolar disorder who blogs about life with the condition, disability, whatever we want to call it, she came on last year and she told us about how tricky Christmas can be for her when she's in crisis. And she told us about, you know, a time when she had her kids, had all her family around her, everything was going well on the surface, but she just had to keep going into her bedroom and crying because it was so, so hard for her. So I went back and I asked her what where she would send people online for some support, some mental health support, on the days when everything's closed. So on Christmas Day, Boxing Day, that kind of thing. And she said, well, there's lots of different things, but she said the all-rounder that she'd send people to is Mind Mental Health Charity's website, which is mind.org.uk. And at the top of that website, they have a button that says, I need urgent help. And that sends you into a sort of a triage system, which walks you through some steps. It asks you lots of questions about how you're feeling. It asks you, have you got your crisis plan, which is something people who are known to have mental health problems and are getting help have drawn up for them. If you can't find it, they bring you through maybe what the next steps are. They might suggest a doctor's call. They might suggest looking at one of their email, one of their leaflets, which are all online. Or they might suggest one of the helplines that are around. So they might suggest the Samaritan helpline, which is 24 hours a day. It's for people in despair or who might be feeling suicidal. We'll put some details of all this on the website. I don't know if Dolly has anything to add to that one.
Yes, just try and find ways to look after yourself, you know, ways to kind of nurture yourself if you can. I mean, I put this question to my Facebook friends and they were saying, you know, do what's nourishing, eat chocolate, have a space where you can, you know, have time out, connect with people who, you know, understand. I mean, my kind of, you know, I try not to be too serious over Christmas, so I dress up the dog as a reindeer and myself as Santa. I try to make it as, you know, not so as serious as it could be. That's how I deal with it. But yeah, just find ways to kind of be kind to yourself.
Yeah, because I think with all the festive stuff we've got going on today and all over this period, we do need to remember that it's people who find it really, really, really hard.
One of the hardest things to imagine, though, isn't it, as well? Because when you think about disabilities or whatever, you can imagine not being able to see or not being able to hear or not being able to walk because there are things that you can do. And so you can imagine if that was taken away from you. It was very hard to imagine a different state of mind or mental. Do you know what I mean? It's hard to get your head around putting yourself in someone else's shoes with things like that. It's not just a matter of taking something away or just saying, well, you can't do that anymore. It's quite a complex thing to imagine, I find.
No, I think the difference between saying you can't use your legs anymore and the difference and then saying you can't be happy anymore.
Yeah. You know,
it's very hard to imagine that.
It's funny, I actually experienced a bout of mental health where I had a reaction to a drug I was given after an operation, post-operative depression. And until I'd had that, I thought I knew what being depressed was, but I'd been depressed about stuff, things. This was being depressed about nothing. And it was just like being pushed off a cliff on a skateboard. It's the only way I can explain it, is you just free fall. And until I had that, I just had no experience of it. And it's indescribable.
And Christmas is a very difficult time to experience it because everyone else is, you know, seemingly so happy and all your sort of mental health support does feel like it's taken away. So thank you very much, Emma, for your presence under the tree, including how to get help if you need it.
You're very welcome. Merry Christmas.
And there go those sleigh bells. Rudolph is on his way again because it's the Ouch annual Christmas quiz with me, Kate Monaghan, and over there, Rob Crossan.
Hello.
Still with us are Dolly Sen, Mick Scarlett and Chris McCausland. And it's time for round three, which we're calling the Disability Semi-Awareness Round. And then it's time to go home. So the first question in our Disability Semi-Awareness Round is... it's a very nice fundamental question, which I do wonder how many of you will get. How many disabled people are there in the world?
I thought you were going to say, does it take to change a light bulb?
Yeah.
Take the blind ones out of that.
And the wheelchair users. Depends if it's on the ceiling. If it's a lamp, we're fine.
Well, I read somewhere 80% of disabled people live in developing countries. I think that was that. That's about as much of a figure as I've read on this recently. How many are there in the world? 7 billion. So let's just say, I mean, everything's a disability now, isn't it? So let's say a third of that. So 2 billion people.
2 billion. Any other guesses around? Dolly.
750 million and one.
Nice. That one's just got their diagnosis, so important to to include that one.
Yeah, welcome aboard.
I don't know, it'd be just over 1 billion, I would say.
And the jingle bells are going to go to Mick Scarlett for that one. The United Nations says it's 1 billion. And in countries with life expectancies over 70 years, individuals spend 8 years on average living with disabilities. That's over 11% of their lives. Nobody really thinks about it like that, though, that you spend 11% of your lives, or people will spend 11% of their lives disabled, do they?
No, it's one of the things that I always think about people when they go, oh, there's disabled and non-disabled. It's like, well, no, there's just disabled and not disabled yet. Because, quite frankly, if you live long enough, you're going to be one of the gang. And so that's why you want to make the world more accessible for everybody, because one day it will benefit you. Not that that's something I say to people a lot.
Well, what percentage of your life do you spend sleeping, though?
For me, I'd like it
about
to
90.
Be about 90%.
So if you really don't, if you don't fancy the idea of being disabled, you can just, you know, store up a bit of sleep. You can spend all of that 11% disability time
that
under
would
the sheets.
Lush. That would
be
love
good.
That.
That's all right. Next question: can any of you tell me what a hoople is?
Hoople.
Repeat that.
Hoople.
Hoople.
H-O-O-P-L-E. Do you know this word? Has just popped into my head from the archive summit. Is this one of those stupid white sticks that is a big loop?
Yes. You know what? He's good.
Yes,
Chris has got it exactly right.
It
I wasn't expecting
one.
Anybody to get that. It is a hoop-shaped mobility aid for blind people. It's very similar to a kind of white cane, but it's meant to be, apparently. Never seen one, never used one myself. It's meant to be good on rugged terrain like sand or in snow, and there's the tenuous Christmassy link.
I thought it was a bloke called
there.
Mott.
It just looks like a giant tennis racket to
it's
me.
A white stick for people who can't be arsed moving it from left to right.
So it's cool. The lazy
you seem to treat this with disdain, Chris.
Of a stick.
I haven't. I mean, I've always had my eye condition, but I haven't always been blind, and so I saw people using these things in the mid 90s, and they looked ridiculous. They looked like novelty, like when you used to watch the Paul Daniels show, and there'd be some bloke doing bubbles that he'd climb inside, and they look like kind of bubble apparatus.
Recently, I had a little kid. I had this little kid go, why don't they just use lightsabers? And I thought, that's great. That's what you want, a lightsaber, isn't it? A lightsaber stick. Get out of my way. Brilliant.
Right, next question. Saint Valentine. Well, this is very tenuous link to this one. But okay. Saint Valentine is strongly associated with love, acknowledged each year on February the 14th. But what is St. Valentine's disability link?
There's an awful lot of silence in this quiz.
There is, these questions.
A broken heart.
Yes,
a broken heart.
Heart
condition. Oh. I'm afraid not. He is the patron saint of people with epilepsy.
Oh.
Does anyone else have a favourite patron saint? Mine is St. Jude, the patron saint for lost causes.
I like St. Gertrude, who's a patron saint of mice.
St. Michael, patron saint of underwear.
Famous people who have had epilepsy include the Roman Emperor Julius Caesar, Vincent van Gogh, Danny Glover.
Shaken Stevens.
First time Danny Glover and Vincent van Gogh have been in the same sentence.
My wife's Danny.
Rabbi Lionel Blue and rugby player Dean Ryan. That information came from the Epilepsy Society, obviously. And just as an aside, St. Jude.
Yeah.
Why are you so into lost causes?
Because I feel like that's myself.
Yeah.
So it's like... Just...
Yeah, no complaints from me.
Yeah, exactly.
Next question. So the most recent census of 2011 was the first census ever to capture who uses sign language. So how many people reported that they use sign as their main language in England and Wales? Can we take a punt on that, please? Lots of silence. I want to hear numbers.
Give
numbers,
it a bash,
people.
Dolly, come on.
I only know 3 people, so but I'm sure it's more than that.
So yes. Are you going for 3?
No. I'm going for more than 3.
More than three.
Less than everybody.
That is a good one.
Make 5%? No, that's ridiculous. That wouldn't be 5%.
A number, not a percentage.
Oh, a percent, what a percentage? What how many people are in the country? It was 65 million. Is it now 70?
Around that.
Well, let's guess around that. So, how many people use sign language? I mean, Dolly's gone for more than 3.
Yeah, that's good. All right. I'm going to go for less than 500,000.
And Chris?
I'm going to go for 260,000.
I'm
you're
five.
Actually all miles
actually,
off.
I'm going to give the jingle bell there to Dolly.
Yay.
Yeah, I think she could. I'm glad that 22,000 have reported that they use some form of sign language, and only 15,000 of those reported that they use British Sign Language, though the British Deaf Association completely dispute this figure. They reckon
so,
it's more like 100,000.
So we're not talking about when people are driving, because there's a lot of sign language gets used, don't
we? No, we're not talking about that kind of sign language. No.
I was counting that.
No, Braille's a bit old school, really, though. Chris, do you use it?
No. Nope.
Not at all, and you never have done?
I've never used it. I wasn't born blind, so I probably would have learnt it then, but I've tried to learn it at an older age, and it's beyond me how people can have that level of sensitivity in their fingers.
So how do you read?
Well, it's just, I live in a world of technology. Everything talks to me, you know, iPhone, computer, audio books. If I'm listening to a novel, I'll use an audio book. If I'm reading something factual, I'll read a e-book, read it on the computer.
So you think, I mean, you're in your 30s, are you? Is that
right? Yeah, 37. Yeah.
And so it seems that, really, there could be a whole generation coming up behind you where Braille's just going to become completely redundant. You think that's likely to happen?
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, I mean, it's at the minute, Braille, I would imagine, for a younger generation, is more useful for creating or writing. So when you're learning maths and you have to write down your own workings out and things like that, it's good for things like that, maybe. But you know, as they develop new ways of doing that on tablets and things, I just can't see it.
And apparently only about 18,000 people read Braille these days, and I would assume that number will decline. But yeah, be interesting to find out.
Braille was invented. Let's try and get a Christmas link in here. Let's try our hardest. Right, the Braille was invented so that blind people could read the Bible. That was what it was about. It was to read about Jesus. I mean, those bells, they're tolling. I don't really know what that means. That's quite scary.
But that,
I was talking about Jesus and the bells started tolling and I didn't know what to do.
You really missed her face. Moments where you wished you could see what's going on here because your face was a picture. You froze with horror.
Anyway, Braille was invented to save our souls for blind people. So,
Kate, next question.
Another random one for you all. In Norse mythology, who was Hod, and why is he important at Christmas time?
He carried things.
No.
Sorry, that's a builder's joke.
Everything's going right over my head now. I don't understand it.
Was he the god of snow?
No, but you're on the right track with Christmassy things. What could he be the god of? Christmassy things.
Turkeys, reindeer,
no,
mince pies.
No, keep going. Dolly, any other ideas?
Gifts.
Reindeers?
No.
Mistletoe.
Yes!
Boom.
Dolly gets a jingle of the bells.
They had a god of mistletoe.
Well, let me tell you, Mick.
Thank you.
Sit back.
Inform me.
Sit back and listen to the story.
Kate has a story to tell.
Hod was the blind god who killed fellow god Baldur, and which, according to some people, led to us kissing under the mistletoe. So the disability link there, if we're all wondering, the Christmas link is the mistletoe and the disability link is because he was blind. I think it's pretty important to say that the producer got this information from that most useful of sites, godchecker.com. So if you're ever needing to find out about your Norse gods, godchecker.com is the place to be.
Can you? It sounds like you're kind of checking up on God. What are you up to?
Yeah.
A few famines? Yeah? Okay, what are you doing? What are you doing that's good?
Are you going to answer my prayer? Godchecker.com.
Yeah, godchecker.com. Never mind. Well, that is actually the end of our annual quiz. And I can't say I was exactly keeping count, or indeed keeping count at all, but I'm fairly certain that the winner is Chris McCausland.
Yay!
Yay. Jingle the bells.
Shouldn't everyone be a winner?
Congratulations. I'm not ashamed of coming last.
Well, thank you to Chris McCausland, Dolly Sen and Mick Scarlett for taking part. It's almost like we raised some awareness through the medium of game there, guys, don't you think?
That makes me feel all warm
don't
inside.
You think? We're at the end of the show now, so thanks go to Emma Tracy, Kathleen Hawkins, studio manager Simon Hancock and producer Damon Rose.
We're back in the early new year with some more disability talk, but as promised, we're playing out today with music from African-American hip-hop artist Toni Hickman from Texas. Now, in 2007, she was forced to give up a Universal Records deal when a stroke and a brain aneurysm left her partially paralysed and with mental health problems.
7 years and lots of rehabilitation later, Hickman says becoming disabled has helped her feel better about herself. I used to think that I wasn't attractive when it first happened. Now I understand that the world we live in is crippled pretty. Her latest video features a whole range of disabled people just being themselves and having fun.
Hey, that's what us disabled people are best at, isn't it?
So
Hickman
yeah.
has an album out in February. Here's the first single from it. It's called People Pleaser. And to all of you, wherever you may be, from Kate and myself, have a very, very wonderful Christmas.
Happy
time.
Christmas!
Happy Christmas!
You don't have to change your way for them to accept you, child. If you do, let it be for you. Make them respect you, child. You're beautiful, amazing, like a fire in disguise you are blazing. I hope you don't let this world put your fire out. Go ahead and be great. Go ahead, go ahead. Trust your instincts too. See, you're beautiful, so amazing. Like a fire in disguise, you are blazing. And I hope you don't let this world put your fire out. Go ahead and be great. Go ahead, go ahead. The images in our brain has an effect on the way we see ourselves. Even people make it hard for us to be ourselves. But I'ma tell you, be you. Be the best you, don't worry about fools. Let them choose their own path. Just believe in the life that you have and be great. And I hope you don't let this world put your fire out.
Martial Law Productions.